Seems that there's an ongoing message that I have to convey to you since coming back from India. And that is about how, through silence, to have a more clear experience of the divine within you. I mention this again because I've been writing about it, and I hope that the book will be available to you soon. It's called Living Unity, The Practice of Silence. So I've been reflecting a lot about silence and what it is, outer silence and inner silence, and how we as a culture in the West are noisy. We talk a lot. We use our intellect a lot. We have a lot to say in conversations. We talk casually. We talk seriously. We have a lot of words. And we don't so much value silence. And when I say silence, I mean silence between people sitting together, not talking. Or silence in the midst of a conversation. And then there's inner silence, which has to do with surrender and the willingness to be empty. Surrender is very important. It gives, it opens a door to having a new experience. And so the way to silence, whether we're talking about through the Western approach, which is thy will be done, this aspect of surrender, or the Eastern approach, which has more to do with the oneness of all and the knowing that one is part of the all. Either way, surrender is the key to silence. One has to be willing to enter emptiness and the unknown. So you've heard me talk about this before, because sometimes there are words that develop a new energy or bring forth a new energy. And I think in the consciousness that most of us hold, it's a new energy or a new thought to be silent during the day or to be silent in the midst of a conversation with other people. It's not a usual thing that we do. We have a lot to say because we're mostly attuned to our minds, so we have a lot to say. So I thought for this first time of sitting quietly, we could experiment with seeing what it's like to try to be silent inside, try to just be empty. And for that purpose, I suggest you unfold whatever's folded, your hands, your feet. Your feet need to stay folded. But, you know, relax your posture. And remember that when we sit together, it's a lot about the will and surrendering the will to whatever conception of the divine we hold, by whatever name we hold it. Sometimes a mantra such as, I wait in the unknown, is useful. The word unknown takes us away from mental concepts. I wait in emptiness. I wait in the unknown. That's the place in which new experience can occur. If you wait in the known with your known thoughts, you can't have the experience of the new because you're in the old. And also, the mind can't open to the divine. It's made of something different. It has to be the deeper self that opens. So see what you can do to say inside yourself, I wait in emptiness. I wait in the unknown. Thank you. Many of us have practiced surrender of many things, and yet we're not empty, because inside there's something we're holding on to. Being empty is an accomplishment. It moves us in the direction of freedom. And I want to introduce another thought while we're still silent or striving to be. And that is that anyone who is directing their attention to finding a deeper truth is not alone. You are being helped. Even if you don't feel you're being helped, you're being helped. There's a magnetic attraction between earth and heaven. Think of that. It's not only the earth that's calling out to heaven, it's heaven that's calling out to the earth. Think of that. So when you put yourself in the empty space of waiting, you magnetize a force of the divine towards you. And so you are being helped, whether you think you're making progress or not. And in light of that, it's best to not judge yourself. We often think that the culture of the West, with its technology and wealth, is different than the culture of the East, with its deeper roots in spirit and its less developed economy. But I want to convey to you that the difference between thy will be done, which is a Judeo-Christian surrender, and I wait in the unknown, is not great. So either way, whenever you feel you resonate with, both directions are the direction towards emptiness and silence. Thy will be done is more familiar to the West. Surrender to the unknown, to the Divine Mother, is more familiar to the East. I came back from India having found a new way of describing what going deeper was like. During my experiences there, I began to call it the Cave of Silence. And in that cave, one can go deeper and deeper into silence. One can be empty and emptier. But that cave of silence, which can travel with you, travel with me, travel with all of us, is just that. It's an inner state of being. And it's universal. It's not just for one person. It's the universal passage to the divine. You have a cave of silence inside you, and you can access it if you choose to, or you can try to, or you can have it as a practice, to enter silence as a practice, surrender to the unknown. Use whatever words feel resonant with your own consciousness. And what that brings to you, little by little, is a deep sense of peace and trust and an absence of anxiety and striving. There are energies that activate thoughts that can be very persistent. They're not in the place of silence. They're on a different plane, a different layer of self. And so one has to go beneath that plane. The cave of silence is someplace else. It is the approach to the soul, the indwelling soul. The important thing is not giving up, not getting discouraged, not thinking that there's a different way that's easier. Any way that is in the direction of truth will take you into this crossroads of surrender. Any way, any tradition, any way will take you to the place of needing to surrender. We've just spent a little bit of time approaching silence, seeing what's possible. It's just a little bit of time. The motivation is everything. The willingness to become empty is everything. And so for this particular morning, we can open our eyes again and think about what is involved with entering the unknown and surrender. You know, every person has to evaluate for themselves what the degree of their spiritual motivation is and what it is, actually. What is it that we're doing? What is it that we're hoping for? Everyone has to come up with their own answer to that. Why am I having this movement or this calling or this motivation towards a spiritual life? And I would imagine if we went around the room and asked this question, we'd have a different answer, different words for each person. But it would all come from the emotional quality of hunger or longing. We long for something, which is why we do something, or we try to do something about it. We have a hunger for it. But the question is, how strong is that hunger? How strong is that longing? And only you can answer that question for yourself. Because we give our day priorities. What's important to do during a day? What's important to do during a life? What's important to do in a relationship? We give priorities to that. Well, it has to become number one. It's got to become number one. Otherwise, it doesn't work. The priority of the hunger for an experience of the divine has to be, along with the first commandment, thou shalt have no other gods before me. The priority has to be there. So it can be that we have activities during the day. That's not an obstacle. That's just life happening. You can have activities and work and things to do. Where is your heart? What is your heart wanting? You know, in every moment you can check in with your heart. No matter what you're doing, what is your heart wanting in that moment? And many of us are attuned to the longing, the hunger, the reaching out to God in the midst of everything else, in the midst of it, not separate from it, not during a separate meditation time, but in the midst of an activity. Even working on the computer, even that can be dedicated to God. Everything, everything. But nobody can tell someone else how hungry they are for a spiritual experience. You have to tell yourself that. You have to tell yourself that. And when you tell yourself that, you decide internally, what are you ready to give up as a result of that hunger so it can be satisfied? But you can't have it both ways. because the priority you give to something is how you draw something to you. The longing is a force of the universe. How you reach for something, what feeling of passion and desire and just hunger, wanting that thing, draws to you experiences. So, you know, we can get discouraged about the length of time it takes to accomplish something spiritually. Accomplishment is a big word for the West in particular. We want to accomplish things spiritually. So it's not such a big word in the East. In the West, we are productive. We are goal-oriented. We are accomplished things. We're achievement-oriented. So we want to be spiritual achievers. Or as we had this discussion the other day about some of us want to be spiritual overachievers. You can't have it that way. You can't legislate your own achievement. So the question is, how hungry can you be without having an outcome, without saying, if I don't have this as an outcome spiritually, then I'm just going to go and do other things. Longing is an engine that drives the force of spiritual growth. It's an engine. It magnetizes force. It magnetizes response of the universe. Spiritual practice, whatever you do, and it doesn't even have to be a formal practice. Just thinking about God, just surrendering during the day. I give this to thee. I give myself to thee. Whatever you're doing can become about God. So it doesn't have to be a meditation practice. It can be just your heart speaking in a conversation to the one that is all. But you know what you're willing to do, because if you get preoccupied with other things so you forget that until you go to bed and say your prayers or do your meditation practice and then you catch up with yourself or morning practice. We do that. We compartmentalize. So we have our busyness during the day, and then we have a morning practice or an evening practice, which is good. It's good. But it's not the rest of the day. The rest of the day needs to be included. So that's where longing plays a part. It's like background music. Background music for everything. It's the music of God playing in your consciousness. And you know, especially in conversations in our relationships with each other, that's where we get involved in emotional dynamics, interpersonal dynamics, we like to call it that, interpersonal and social, interpersonal. So in those ways of getting drawn into emotional, interpersonal dynamics with another, we go into this other level of ourself, of emotional reality, and we've given up. We've given up believing something else is possible, namely to have God be present in that conversation, in that moment, in that interaction. We've gotten smaller. So surrender of the ordinary way of doing things, the ordinary conversations, needs to be part of what's considered. How to bring the divine into a conversation means you have to let go of certain roles, certain ways of speaking, certain ways of talking to other people, to let something else happen. Let yourself happen. Let truth happen. Well, I'm in the last moment thinking about whether I should keep talking or whether I should do what we used to do before my last trip, which was to have small groups of people talk about surrender or sit silently together. I'm going in that direction. So I think it's valuable to say either sit with a few other people and speak about whatever this surrender means to you, whatever it is, Or sit in silence and see how you can experience each other in silence.